Yep, he's planning another project. So this Father's Day at Lowe's, tap into free gifts for dad. Get a free select Craftsman power tool when you buy a Craftsman V20 charger with 2 amp hour and 4 amp hour batteries. Plus, get a free DeWalt power tool when you buy a select 20 volt max XR 4 amp hour battery kit. Dad knows our best lineup is here at Lowe's. Valid through 7/14 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor with the generous Professor H.J. Mackinder. Six capitals, six points of view. Ukraine needs ammo. Russia, right now, mysteriously claiming there's an offensive underway. However, and then in Munich, all of the powers in Europe are discussing what comes next, including the future, in which the peace of the late 20th and early 21st century is shattered, and it's difficult to imagine how you put Humpty Dumpty back together again. We need to go to balloon diplomacy, however, because it's dominated the Washington conversation for 7 days and will continue. Professor, what we have now from the administration after several days of waiting for clarity is one downed surveillance balloon off the coast of South Carolina, three UFOs now dismissed as unfindable, over Ukraine, over Alaska, over Yukon, and over Lake Huron, and comments by the president that this was not acceptable conduct by China, but that he will be talking with President Xi and presumably speak harshly about paying a cost for using a surveillance balloon. At the same time, we have remarks from the foreign ministry in Beijing that America is a habitual criminal surveillance empire. So Washington's point of view, not only about Ukraine, but about the conflict with Russia's ally, Beijing.
Well, let's go start with the balloon. There is a saying that the Chinese often use to pick up a rock and drop it on your own foot. And they always accuse us of doing that whenever we do anything that they don't like. But the balloon is a classic example of Beijing fouling things up, and that's one of the reasons that they are so upset about this. Remember, China right now is in an almost unprecedented situation in which she has run out of money, in which pensions are not being paid, in which medical insurance is not being paid, in which salaries are not being paid or are being cut, where exports have dropped by more than 50%, where the price of housing and the real estate market, which is a very major component of the Chinese economy, is collapsing. And it really looks as if there's a kind of disintegration underway. And what they need is a bailout. They want somebody to bail them out. And the only countries that can bail out China are the United States and Western Europe. We do that by loans, by opening up our markets. Remember that during the glory days of the U.S.-China honeymoon, which terminated, we basically transferred $3 trillion into China. We invested $3 trillion, and we transferred, either intentionally or unintentionally, all sorts of advanced technologies. We welcomed hundreds of thousands of extremely able Chinese with an admixture of spies and so forth into the United States. And what China has done now, they prioritized improving relations with the United States. But somehow, they were unable to realize that if they launched this surveillance balloon and it came to the United States, that actually the United States would not would say, we're not going to play with you anymore. And they were convinced. Blinken is a very sincere believer in the idea that China is sort of as Roosevelt was, that a China about which he knows nothing is nonetheless a key, one of the four or five key states of the future world. And certainly China is tremendously important, but it doesn't always fit in with anybody's plans. So they sabotaged their one chance for a bailout by forcing Blinken to cancel his trip. They had assumed that we would either cover up, which is what we do in the past, or that Blinken would just swallow hard because he was so eager to go. And now they're angry at us for essentially for not sending our person, despite the fact that they sent the balloon. Now, maybe they didn't know, but I think that they thought they could sort of have one fist hard and one fist soft, as they say. Now, if we and this balloon, it's been compared to 9/11. It's been compared to Pearl Harbor. And I think it's fair to say that if you have a situation where primary school students in the Midwest of the United States are talking about China as a threat, there's been a change in American public opinion. Now, it may be quite disproportionate to this balloon, which is really of very little importance, but it is a real change, and it's going to constrain relations now as far out as we can see. Now, let's turn to what Washington is thinking about the war in Ukraine. I don't think, as I say every week, that we are thinking seriously about war termination or about the shape of the peace, which we hope will follow. As I've said, to the point of tedium, wars almost always end in bloody victories and bloody defeats. These are then followed by negotiation. You don't proceed directly from a war which has not been decided to negotiations, which then decide what its outcome is going to be. That's just not the way war works. I think that the people in Washington have so little familiarity with the history of warfare in the formation of the modern world, which arguably, as Heraclitus said, I mean, war is the father of all things. Everything comes from war one way or another. Our idea is to skip the military victory business and move straight to negotiation. And that is simply a pipe dream. That's something out of a sort of graduate school seminar on international negotiation. It's nothing that any American general or a serious Secretary of State would recognize as being even possible. And I would add to this, we don't have any idea of the contours of the peace, although we are tightening up alliances. And I think that this indicates that there are people in Washington and in the administration who understand that the future peace is going to be pan-Eurasian. And that's why Japan, Korea, and Australia and Taiwan are so involved. That's why it was such an important achievement that the Philippines finally wised up and just realized that they were going to, if they weren't allowed in the United States, they were going to become an autonomous region of China. There are people who understand this, but there is an awful lot of talking and thinking and negotiating before we're going to get to that. But before we get to that, we should be doing that ourselves now, the thinking. But the first thing we have to do is have the victory. And one of the statements that struck me that was made by several of the European leaders, I think Stoltenberg said this at Munich, was that we have to be sure that Ukraine has the wherewithal to win. And in Washington, there is a sense that we really want to have a war without victory. They say we don't want to humiliate Russia. There's no way that Russia is going to lose in Ukraine, as she must, or we're in terrible trouble. There's no way that Russia is going to be defeated and forced to allow Ukraine to be an independent country again, as she guaranteed. There's no way we can do that without Russia being deeply, deeply humiliated, and furthermore, likely to become politically disorderly in the aftermath. The idea that there's going to be a kind of a soft landing, and that Putin is going to say, well, okay, where do I sign? You know, that's not right. We're unleashing primal passions of nationalism, of pride, fear, all of these things, and putting them back into Pandora's box is going to be a very, very difficult thing to do. So I would argue for Washington that we have to, A, be sure that Ukraine wins, that there is a culminating point at which the Russians realize that they have been so bloodied by these dreadful Ukrainians that they really should get out. And they're, of course, approaching the end of their resources. And as long as we keep supplying the Ukrainians, I think that's realistic. But we also have to think seriously about what the contours of the peace are going to be. And we have to realize that what we've learned from this war is that you can't separate politics and economics. You can't be defending against the Soviet Union and also carrying out Ostpolitik at the same time. There is, as long as you have horrendous dictatorial regimes, such as you have in China, or a rather bad autocratic regime, nowhere near as bad as China, such as you have in Russia. Russia is, in theory, constitutional. Putin cheats, whereas in China, the constitution is itself repressive. We have to understand that economics and politics have to go hand in hand. So if we're going to have an economic bloc, it also has to, and a military bloc, they have to coincide. And the contours of the peace are what going to determine, however, we've got 75 more years left in this century. The contours of this peace, let's say that it comes in a year or two, they are going to really determine, at least for 20 or more years, the future of the whole Eurasian landmass and of the United States and of offshore Asia as well as onshore Asia. That's where the future is. And I think we just can't quite get our hands around that. We're not quite awake to be able to realize how enormous these changes are going to be and how unaccustomed they're going to be.
Speaking to Professor H.J. McAdoo, International Relations, one more capital, Beijing. In Italy, the new foreign minister of the People's Republic of China told the foreign ministry of Italy that Xi Jinping will be making a speech about peace on the 24th, the anniversary of the attack by Russia, his ally, on Ukraine. So when we come back, the Beijing point of view, which is really the point of view of one man, the General Secretary for Life, Xi Jinping. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.
Save big money on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Get your project started right with our huge selection of concrete and mortar mixes. Our concrete products are great for a variety of applications, from installing a walkway to setting a post. View our entire selection of concrete mixes and supplies in-store and on Menards.com. Plus, check out the weekly flyer for more great deals happening now.
Save